Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Road to Revolution podcast, my journey with Linkin Park. And today's episode is going to be another double show. We're going to be talking about two stops on the 1,000 Suns North American Tour in 2011. The first show we're going to talk about was the Philadelphia stop, which was January 31st of that year. It was at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and went to that show with Sal. No surprise there. The openers for this show were Pendulum and Does It Offend You? Yeah. These were a bit different of a choice for openers for Linkin Park, but something they always did that I thought was really cool was a lot of times when they went on tour for the new album, whatever it was at the time, they made a point to bring out bands that reflected the sound of that album. So when Minutes to Midnight came out, they were touring with bands like My Chemical Romance and Taking Back Sunday and more straightforward rock bands that spanned various types of rock. It wasn't just hard rock or metal or punk or ska or emo or whatever it was. They always made a point to say, if this is what the album's going to sound like, we want to surround ourselves on tour with bands that are similar in style or tone to that record. So when 1,000 Suns came out, they went a more electronic route, which was really cool. Some people weren't as into it. I thought this was awesome. Both of these bands were incredible on this tour. I had liked Does It Offend You? Yeah, for a bit before this. I heard one of their songs in a trailer for one of the Fast and Furious movies. I think it was the fourth one, the one that brought everyone back in after Tokyo Drift. And I always thought it was a really, really cool, different sounding song. So it wasn't exactly dubstep, and it wasn't like straight up electronic. It mixed rock and electronic and all these elements together in a really cool way. And it was really, really good. So having them open the show is a really, really good, big energy to have. And then Pendulum, man, I was just so blown away by them. They did something I always wanted to do, but it's something you need to have a good, high quality, setup to pull off. One of their guitarists, I think it's their singer as well, his guitar is all digital. It's a MIDI guitar. So all his sounds that he's playing are actually run through computer that has all these sounds built in. So instead of running, you know, like a normal guitar would run through effects pedals and an amp and a processor and all this stuff, this guitar didn't have any tuning pegs on it, and the strings were just controllers for sounds that were in a computer or a brain that had all these sounds in it. And it was awesome. Watching him play this, I was just like in awe. I was kind of really excited that we were front row. I mean, I'm always excited to be in the front row, but being in the front for this was really, really cool because we were really close, dead center. So watching their guitars play during the show, I was just like, the first time I didn't know that's how his setup was. So when I saw his guitar, I was just like, oh my God, what is this? This is fantastic. And I was just in awe. And I tried to replicate that on my own a bit. I had gotten a much cheaper MIDI guitar around the same time. And it was cool. It was a fun little toy to play with, you know, in Logic. But it did not sound anywhere near the same. You know, but you get what you pay for with stuff like that. So, I tried, I failed, whatever, moved on, but they were incredible. Crazy energy too. Like just, I have not looked them up in quite some time and I would love to actually do that because they were great at this show, on this whole tour, the two shows we went to. And on the other half of the tour, Prodigy was on the tour as well, which is amazing. I wish we would have gotten them on this portion of the tour, but you know, I cannot complain about Pendulum and Does It Offend You? Yeah, they were both great. And then Linkin Park came up, you know, headlining, and their set was just something else. Like they leaned heavily into the 1,000 Suns stuff because it was the tour for that album, but man, just the stage presence was great. And the way their stage was set up, it came to like a point in the middle. So it wasn't like a straight square or rectangular stage as most bands would have. Theirs came to like a point at the very center. So it was a bit more of a dynamic setup. And it made interacting with the crowd a bit interesting as well, because it, like I said, it wasn't a straightforward, you stand, you know, perpendicular or parallel. I get those confused. But you don't stand directly in front of the stage in a straight line. It was like a curved or like a triangle set up for the barricades to where the stage would point. So it was interesting to see how that was set up and how that would play into how the band would interact with the crowd. But it was great. But before I dive into the whole show, because this was in Pennsylvania and we were still in New York at the time, the drive over there was just so much fun. This is one of those drives to shows that I remember pretty vividly. Sal and I were in rare form that day, just being goofy and silly and trying to entertain ourselves on the drive and making jokes based on the cars that we drove past and doing Arnold voices, and which I will spare you from because in my head, my Arnold voice is great. I'm sure in everyone else's head, it is not great. So I will spare you that on this podcast. But we just had a great time driving over on this show. And those good times ended when we got to the venue to wait because it was January 31st in the Northeast. And if you know anything about that, you know it was damn cold outside. This may be one of the coldest experiences I've had waiting for a Linkin Park show. I think the coldest experience waiting for a Linkin Park period was the book signing they did in 2004 in New York. But this, in terms of a show, it's either this or the Madison Square Garden show on this tour. It was just a blisteringly cold winter that year in the Northeast. And I don't want to ever experience that cold ever again. Oddly enough, this winter was part of the catalyst, no pun intended, for moving away from New York, which happens very soon in this story. Eventually moved to warmer climates, as you will see soon. But yeah, between the weather was so cold and I was wrapping up school and I'm looking for a bit of a change. And one of the little kind of cherries on top, or not so much the cherry on top, but the final nail in that coffin of wanting to get out of New York and away from the cold, was we had a really bad storm around this time, maybe the Christmas before this show. So just a couple of weeks or maybe a month or so before. And you know, we got snowed inside and we, you know, were pretty much stuck inside for the week or so after Christmas. And once it finally, the roads got good enough and it warmed up a bit, I decided, hey, I'm going to get out of here. It's my friend's birthday. He's having a small little get together at his house. So I'm going to get out of here, go over there for a bit, just to not be in the same house, which is funny to talk about now because we've been home for this week. It'll mark 2 months now, due to the coronavirus quarantine. So, which again, spoiler, this episode's coming out in mid-June. So it's actually 3 months, but I'm recording in mid-May. So, making the most out of this downtime. So yeah, that's a little secret, recording a bunch in during the downtime. So being productive, but when it comes out, just know it's recorded way before. So it'll be 3 months when you hear this, but it's 2 months when I'm recording. But it's just funny to think about that. Like, you know, after a week or so being inside with the snowy weather, I was like, I gotta move away from New York. I'm done. I'm done being cold and snowy and shoveling. I got to get out of here to warmer temperatures. And now I'm in warmer temperatures, stuck inside for 2-3 months. But then again, who knows? Maybe by June 15th, there'll be some semblance of normal life and we can go outside to places. Who knows? It's wishful thinking. I'm ready to get back to the real world. But for now, I'm going to keep recording this podcast. But yeah, going to that friend's party, I got in my car and I pulled out of my driveway and driving down the block, and I got maybe a couple blocks away. And I, you know, obviously I had the heat on and everything and the, you know, defrosters and all that stuff. And after driving for a few minutes, I heard a loud pop and my windshield just spiderwebbed. Just it was so cold that the heat from inside the car caused it to not shatter, because windshields are made in a way to not shatter. So if they do break, if something hits them, they don't shatter inward and, you know, stab you or cut you. So all I saw was this giant crack go across the windshield. luckily it was, you know, I could still drive. I wasn't in danger or anything, but I did have to get it fixed, which was not cheap, but you know, we got it fixed, all sorted out. But that was like the final nail in the coffin. I was just like, I'm done. You know, this doesn't happen in Florida, which, you know, Florida has its own problems, many of its own problems. I will tell you, after living here for so long now, the Florida man stories are absolutely true. I am not Florida man, but the Florida man stories are not a fabrication. They're not a joke. I mean, they're funny, but they're real. There are a lot of quote unquote Florida man down here, but I think Florida man is starting to become a spirit that one embodies, not so much because of where they're from anymore. Because there are, I read the stories going around the world right now, and there are Florida man stories from all over the country, all over the world. So who knows, you know, what the cause is. People are dumb. But yeah, back to the Linkin Park show. We get to the venue. It is freezing. And we luckily, you know, we always had really good luck with the people we'd wait in line with. They were always really cool, and we're all there for the same reason. So we would bond pretty quickly and easily. And at this point too, and I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but at this point too, from Sal and I going to so many shows, and you know, both of us having performed with them at one point, and you know, we were known by people. People would recognize us at the shows, and you know, people knew who we were, which was kind of a cool thing. By no means would I use the word celebrity, because that's not it at all. But like, it's cool to go to these shows. Like, hey, are you Billy? Hey, are you Sal? You played with them at that show, right? And it's kind of, you know, it's a cool little thing to have happen. But you know, no amount of cool people waiting in line with you at the show can make you warmer until you find a way to make that work. So we all kind of bonded together and said, all right, we have a long time until the show starts. How can we make it so we're not completely frozen icicles by the time we get in there? And we all decided to go in waves and go get food locally. You know, we were at the Wells Fargo Center in Philly, which was near a bunch of restaurants and shops and stuff like that. So we would all go in like little groups. So basically, you know, one group would go and we would make sure their spot was safe. And then they come back and another group would go. So when it was Sal and I's turn, we ended up walking over. Did we walk or did we drive? I want to say we walked because it was freezing, but we already paid for parking at the venue and we didn't want to leave. So, and I think I'm pretty sure we just ended up walking to the restaurant. It was called Chicky and Pete's, which I'd never heard of before, but it was the nearest restaurant that looked appetizing. So we ended up going there and it was delicious. And I don't know if it's because we were freezing and it was an indoor warm restaurant with decent food, or because the food was that great, but it was great. We were just the happiest people on earth. Couldn't even tell you what I got that day. Don't remember what the food was, but it was delicious. I can tell you that. So once we were properly fed and warm, we decided, all right, back to the venue we go. So we walked back over, and it was getting a bit later in the afternoon now, so it was getting closer to time for the doors to open. So we get back over there, and there might have been one more group to go get food after us, or we might have been the last ones. I can't remember. But we end up you know, standing there, and we get into the venue finally. And once we're inside, it's pretty standard fare. You know, get on the rail, hang out, talk to the security guards, talk to the photographers, you know, make conversation with the people around us until it is time for the show to start. And I think back at this stuff now about the waiting all day and being on the rail for hours during the show when you don't move from that spot and you don't get to go to the bathroom and stuff. And I can't fathom it anymore. Like, maybe it's because I'm getting older. Maybe it's because I, TMI here. I'm a nervous peer. I can't go to the movies without, like, I get to the movies and I pee as soon as we get there. And then when I'm like 2 minutes away from the trailer starting, I like make myself go pee again. Just because I don't want to be in this pivotal point of the movie and suddenly have to go pee and have me think about that for the rest of the movie. You know, I think about like something like Endgame, which is 3 hours and 2 minutes. And luckily I was nice and empty for that movie. So I didn't, you know, I never had to get up and didn't have to pee, didn't think about that or nothing. But can you imagine being like, you know, this 11 year journey of watching the MCU movies, and you get up to the big fight at the end, and you know, they're all assembling, and you have the fullest bladder in the world, and all you could think about is you have to pee so bad that when Cap says "Avengers assemble," you just don't enjoy it because you're like, I need this movie to be over. So I think about that with movies, and I think about, like, at least with a movie, I could physically get up and go to the bathroom. I probably wouldn't, because I'm a masochist, and I would rather have a full bladder and have to pee than miss part of the movie. But with a concert, like, you don't get that chance. Like, the best you get is, you know, before the floor starts getting super full, you know, you and whoever you go with, you know, in this case, it's Sal, we break off and we run to the bathroom, and, you know, and then we come back, and, you know, whoever doesn't go stands and spreads the legs on the rail and makes sure that no one takes their spot. But otherwise, like, you know, you're up there until the show's over. And, you know, it was rough. Luckily, I can't remember really any times where that really ruined the experience. Headaches more often than not would be a thing up there. You know, if you're headbanging too much or just, you know, tired, whatever it is, you know, you get a headache, and that could ruin things a little bit. But yeah, you know, you don't remember the headaches. You remember the concert, which is good. If you remember the headache, that means the headache was actually just catastrophic, or the concert was just that bad. But luckily, I don't have many memories of that. The concert being that bad, or the headaches being that bad. So, but we get up there and we're waiting, and the show starts. And I already talked about "Does It Offend You?" Yeah, and "Pendulum." But in Linkin Park played a pretty long set. Played 24 songs. Lot of stuff from A Thousand Suns, and then, you know, the stuff you expect. You know, you're In the End, you're Crawling, Paper Cut, and One Step Closer is back in the closing spot, with New Divide leading into that, which is kind of cool. And I believe that was it for New Divide being the second to last song on the show. I think they swapped that with Crawling going forward on this tour, and they never went back to that for the rest of this tour, which is pretty cool. I don't know the reasoning, but, you know, I'm sure they have their reasons. But yeah, that's it for the Philly show. Oh no, actually, one other note about the Philly show. We met a guy in line at that show. His name was Lorenzo, who ended up being an amazing person to know within the Linkin Park family. He went on to work for the LPU, you know, the Linkin Park Underground, and then he went on to do a bunch of great projects with other artists and Linkin Park around the world. I would run into him at shows all the time. He was just always such a great dude, nice to talk to, and he always remembered Sal and I because of that show. Which I always thought was really cool. So I don't know if Lorenzo listens to this, or if he even knows this podcast exists, but you know, it was always cool talking to him or meeting him at these shows. So I just wanted to shout him out. But now that is it for the Philadelphia show. So let's move on to the New York City stop on the Thousand Suns North American tour. This one marks the return of Linkin Park to Madison Square Garden. This would be my second time seeing Linkin Park at this venue, and it would also mark the last time Linkin Park would ever play at Madison Square Garden. This one was on February 4th, 2011, so a couple of shows in between Philly and New York, but I think that was Boston, which, you know, a few more hours out than I wanted to do on a school and work week. But yeah, went with Sal again, same opening bands, and Pendulum and Doesn't Offend You, yeah. And as I mentioned before, crazy stupid cold outside again. I almost said luckily. I don't know if this is luckily, though. The way the waiting would go at Madison Square Garden is you'd wait by these doors on 8th Avenue. And that's where the line would start. And the line would typically wrap around up 33rd Street. But you were covered, which is good because you're covered from the elements. So if it was sunny or hot outside, you'd be in the shade. But when it's February 4th and it is freezing outside, being covered in the shade does not help you because you're just colder. You know, anytime you could be in the sun would help you thaw out just a little bit. So this one was a cold one. You know, at least in Philadelphia, we were in the sun, we were open. But that meant you were also, you know, getting hit by the wind, and it was both of these shows were cold. You know, I don't miss the winter concerts from when I lived up north. I also don't know how much I would do of these anymore, the long waiting and the outside of the winter and stuff, because now that I'm older, you know, I love going to shows still. I truly do, but I'm there more for the experience than the, I need to be in the front. That being said, we were in the front row again, and actually I'm trying to think if from here on out, I don't think there was a Linkin Park show I had been to where I was not in the front row. And that, I think that goes up until the very last show. I think I'm almost positive we were front row for everything. And I'm sure if I'm not, we'll correct and discuss that during that episode, but I'm 95% sure we were front row for the rest of these. So we shall see. But yeah, this show, I think up until this point was the longest Linkin Park, set list I'd ever seen, which was 25 songs. And still another good mix of A Thousand Suns and, Minutes to Midnight and the classics. Now this was the one I mentioned earlier where they switched to New Divide and Crawling. So New Divide was in the middle of the encore, and then Crawling, and then One Step Closer, once again closed. So kind of nice to have them go back to the classic closing number of One Step Closer. I just always thought that was that to me, that was their best closer, especially when they throw in the extended outro. Or if you think back to like the 2004 tour where they had Korn out with them and they would do the extended part of the song from Reanimation where Jonathan Davis would come out and sing his part. Those were great. Like, I'm team One Step Closer for the closing song. Faint's a great closer. Bleed It Out's a good party song as a closer. But man, One Step Closer for me is always going to be their best closing song. But yeah, not a ton really about the Madison Square Garden show. It's weird because the MSG show before this was such a huge deal. It was their first time playing Madison Square Garden. Jay-Z came out and played a couple of songs with them. So for this one, it was a great show. And I think this one was actually filmed and shown on Fuse, almost the entire show. Not all of it. I think a couple of songs were left out for whatever reason. But most of the show was filmed. So it was kind of cool to go back and watch that. But if I remember correct, not a lot of interaction at the show. Maybe a what's up or a point. But I don't think they came down. And it wasn't anything like singing with them or anything like that at the show. But yeah, I mean, seeing your favorite band at Madison Square Garden is always a huge thrill. So this one, this was a great show. I really, really like this one. But that's it for Linkin Park and MSG in 2011. Now, we were supposed to go see one more show on the Minutes to the Thousand Suns tour. It was going to be a week later on February 11th in Connecticut. But there was a huge snowstorm, and the weather this winter in New York and the Northeast was brutal. So we ended up getting snowed out of this show, and they canceled a handful of shows on this tour. We're going to see them at I think it was the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville in Connecticut, but weather kind of crushed that plan. But you know what? I don't get too beat up about that one. You know, I can go on for years about, you know, oh, it would have been great to go to this show. Oh, it would have been great to go to that show. But this one, I'm not going to call it a blessing in disguise because I'm always going to wish I had more time seeing the band, which is weird to say for a guy who saw them 34 times plus side projects. But out of the cancellation, I got a nice weekend with some friends up at, you know, one of their family's cabins in upstate New York. We had an awesome weekend, just, you know, did some drinking, you know, we all cooked some food, we played games, we just had a lot of fun. And, you know, it's all that stuff was stuff we could have done down in New York City. But in fact, we all went up there. It's like 8 or 9 of us, I think. And just nice. We go up there, we're surrounded by snow in the mountains, and you know, we went outside a little bit, but it was just so cold. And we were more concerned with just, you know, drinking and having fun. So we're just playing games and just, I don't know, enjoying our time together, especially because we were all on the edge of being full-blown grown-ups. So it was nice to have a weekend where we could just have fun and, you know, not worry about anything. Oddly enough, this was February of that year, in Labor Day week, the week before Labor Day of that year. New York was actually in the line of a huge hurricane, and we had a trip planned back to this cabin. Same group, just we were going to do like an end of summer bash up there. And we thought, hey, hurricane, you know, we all lived in New York City, and then, you know, there's beaches and stuff around the city, and I actually lived right by the beach in Queens. So I was all for the plan of getting out of the city. So we're like, hey, we'll get out of here. We can go upstate. Hurricanes don't hit the mountains. Like, we'll be fine. Well, spoiler alert, the hurricane beat the shit out of this mountain. We were actually stuck up there an extra couple of days because one of the roads that we would have needed to get out of there was flooded and caved in and things like that. And luckily, we found another way around, but we ended up just staying an extra couple of days. And we had enough food and water and beer to last us. So it was another nice little a couple of days up there. The funny thing was the power had gone out for about a day and a half, 2 days. So what we ended up doing for entertainment was, you know, we all had our cars up there. So we would run out there for, you know, a little bit to charge our phones and just drive around the immediate area to keep the battery charged. And then we'd go back inside. But it's almost like how people would, you know, have nightly entertainment back in like the early 1900s or early to mid 1900s before TV and stuff. We would just take our phones and we'd put them in like a cup to, you know, amplify the sound because none of our speakers would have worked. And we'd put the phone in a cup and we'd put on like stand-up albums. So it's like we're just listening to, you know, our nightly entertainment on the radio. So it was kind of nice. And we'd cook food over the fire and all that stuff. So it was a fun little trip, all things considered. And the only downside was what should have been like a 4-ish hour drive back from upstate New York ended up being, I'm not even exaggerating, I think door to door for me was 10 hours. It was just brutal. I think anyone who was stuck upstate decided to go back that day, and it was rough. I forgot about that until right now, and now I'm angry because that was just so terrible. But yeah, I don't know how people are feeling about the mixing of, you know, the extra personal stories into the Linkin Park shows, but some of the shows I feel like clock in a little short. So I always like to want to pepper some stuff in just to spruce things up a little bit. And plus, you know, like it's my podcast. If people don't like the stories, you can skip them. It's fine. I won't be angry. But I know some people do like the stories. So I'm going to keep telling them. But we're closing in on the end here. This was LP shows 25 and 26. 34 is the last one of the LP shows. So we're closing in. We're getting there. So the next episode is going to be another combo show. Two stops on the same tour again. It was the Honda Civic tour in 2012. This one with Incubus, their co-headlining tour, which was such a great tour. I'm very excited to talk about that one. And those were, no surprise, once again, a very familiar combo of locations in Camden, New Jersey, and Jones Beach, both of which would be the last time I was at each of those venues. So not sure if I'll ever get back to those venues, but we'll talk about that during those shows. But for now, I'm going to wrap things up. Until next time, I thank you so much for joining me today. My name is Billy Archiello, and this has been My Road to Revolution.